listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Now, picture the scene. A small group of eccentric creative types work in a decrepit building and come up with an innovative product that sweeps the world, earning millions of dollars. The company sees ups and downs, takeovers, and drama, but that product ushers in a new era. Is it Silicon Valley? Seattle? No, it's Lake Geneva, Wisconsin in the 1970s. The product? A new kind of game called Dungeons & Dragons. Here's a game of D&D in action in the Netflix hit series Stranger Things.
The hooded cultists chant, "Hail, Lord Vecna. Hail, Lord Vecna." They turn to you, remove their hoods. You recognize most of them from Mokbar. There is one you do not recognize. His skin shriveled, desiccated, and something else. He is not only missing his left arm, but his left eye.
No! No! No!
No!
No!
Vecna's dead!
He killed my cat!
So it was thought, my friends. So it was thought. But Vecna lives!
Vecna lives, and so does Dungeons & Dragons. In his new book, our next guest tells the story of the rise and fall of TSR, the Lake Geneva company that made Dungeons & Dragons, and the buyout that kept the game alive. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you now, or have you ever been a D&D player? Were your kids, your grandkids, were you there at Ground Zero? Maybe even in Lake Geneva yourself? Did you play in the early days? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ben Riggs is a writer, teacher, and podcaster from Milwaukee, where he teaches English and history. He's the host of a role-playing game podcast called Plot Points, and his new book is called Slaying the Dragon, A Secret History of Dungeons & Dragons. Ben, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. It's a dream to be on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Fantastic. Well, glad to have you. Now, you tell the story not just of the creative side of the creation of Dungeons & Dragons, but also the business side. And this was, TSR was in the business papers, you write. What made you want to dig into that side of the story?
So it was a story that demanded to be told. About 6 years ago, I was writing for Geek & Sundry, and I was assigned an article tentatively titled, "Did you know that Dungeons & Dragons wasn't always made in Seattle?" And being in Wisconsin and knowing a bunch of the old hands back here, I was given the job of writing that article. And as I worked on it, one article became three articles, and people started sending me documents in the mail asking to be confidential. I got interviews with people no one had talked to before. So the writing stretched out over 6 years, and I was like, if I don't write this, no one will. And it's a piece of Wisconsin history that has not yet seen the light of day. So it's been a pleasure to write, and I'm really glad that people are reacting so positively to the book.
Take us back to the origin here. We've got this really in Lake Geneva, this local eccentric, as you describe him, Gary Gygax, go from, you know, an out of work cobbler at some points to the creator of this new kind of game.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that Gary Gygax is the most influential Wisconsinite in our state's history. And yet, nobody really talks about him much. Lake Geneva doesn't even have a statue to him. He was an unemployed insurance underwriter fixing shoes in his children's basement, who was designing wargaming rules for fun. And one of his kids told me, you know, he only made enough money from that to like take the family out to dinner once or twice. Then a guy comes down from Minnesota, Dave Arneson, and he shows Gary Gygax what he did with one of his wargames, a wargame called Chainmail. And Dave Arneson took that game and he used it to, he gave players a single character, which was new. They were exploring a dungeon, and these characters persisted from game session to game session and increased in power as they went along. And Gary Gygax was like, "Holy cow, this is amazing. Dave Arneson, give me all the rules to this game." So Dave Arneson sent him between 18 and 24 cribbed and cramped pages. Gary Gygax took that and set about making it into a rule set that would be called Dungeons and Dragons. But again, what he created was so radical, so new, we're still grappling with it today. It's like someone invented acting in 1974. Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson found something new to do with pencils, papers in your brain that no one thought of before. So again, it's one of the reasons that people oftentimes grapple with explaining how to play D&D and what D&D is. But Wisconsin saw the birth of a totally new medium, one in which the player is like the actor and audience at the same time. Again, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin really is a mecca. And again, I feel like we don't appreciate it properly within the state. Did that answer your question?
Oh, yeah. And now this company, TSR, Tactical Studies Rules, it stands for, they end up having this multi-million dollar product. Can you talk about how it went from that germ of an idea to this thing that really just swept the country, including to a young fella named Rob, just coming out of elementary school, if I could age myself?
So yeah, the growth of the game was exponential. Tactical Studies Rules, TSR, was founded because no other company would publish the rules. They just didn't see what the market for it was going to be. But the ability to take one character and control them and do anything was addictive. I want to say the first 1,000 copies sold out in a little under a year. The second 1,000 copies sold out in like 5 or 6 months. And it really saw exponential growth through 1983, as I recall. Again, it was slowed by the fact that it is really hard to explain how to play, but it's very easy to watch someone play and be like, oh, that's what you do in a role-playing game. It's why role-playing games have really taken off now in the 21st century, because YouTube allows you to watch people play all day long, and that's the best way to learn how to play. But the fact that D&D was so new and such an innovation, that really drove that first burst of growth through the early 80s. And then there was a crisis, and Gary Gygax lost control of D&D and the company, and the game was purchased by a woman named Lorraine Williams, who oversaw the company's silver age through 1997, when it was finally purchased by Magic the Gathering creators Wizards of the Coast, and took the game out to Seattle, and Wisconsin lost a jewel, sadly, although the Wizards of the Coast, I think, has done a very good job with it. Did that make sense?
Yeah, we're talking to Milwaukee-based writer, teacher, and podcaster Ben Riggs about a big piece of Wisconsin history. His new book is called Slaying the Dragon, A Secret History of Dungeons and Dragons, looking at the invention of a whole genre of games called role-playing game that ended up being influential in lots of other stuff, including computer games. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about the history of the game, what it is, how it works? Are you part of that history? Do you play it now? Did you maybe years ago? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ben, as you mentioned, there was kind of there have been multiple crisis periods in the history of the game and of TSR. It seems like one problem was they'd come up with this product. They made lots of money at it. None of them really knew a lot about how to run a business, though, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, at TSR, initially you had, again, Gary Gygax was an insurance underwriter and cobbler. You had a pharmacist, you had a pipe fitter, and they were running the company. And, you know, life is well and good when your product is growing exponentially. And then when Lorraine Williams took over, again, she'd worked in business, but her degree was not in business. And she did hire business people, but she tended to hire, you know, like people from the cardboard industry are suddenly working at TSR, dealing with artists and writers. You had one executive come down to Brahm, a genius artist who would create these gloomy landscapes and these intriguing, mysterious characters, you know, but tended to be fairly monochrome. And this executive says to Brahm, now make sure you use all your colors in this painting because it's important, and which is a bit like telling Shakespeare to use more words. There definitely was a gap between the business ability of the people running the company and perhaps what it should have been. Role-playing games are also a difficult business. You know, if you drink a bottle of Miller, if you want more Miller, you have to go buy more. If you spent $30 on Dungeons & Dragons rule books in 1979, you could still be playing with them today and never would have needed anything else. The fact that, you know, this is an evergreen product that never goes bad causes real problems for role-playing game companies, because after you sell it to them once, what do you do? And Dungeons and Dragons has tried to come up with new editions and use that as an engine of growth for the game. And the current edition, fifth edition, is apparently a huge hit. I don't have sales numbers for it, but the Player's Handbook came out 8 years ago, and it's still in like the top 50 sellers on Amazon today. That's crazy. Wizards of the Coast claims that they've had 50 million people experience the game, even if that means 25 million people have played it. That's tremendous growth. Like I would say that when the game was in Wisconsin, it probably maxed out around 2 million players. So it's grown exponentially since it left the state.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Kathleen is with us in Elgin. Kathleen, hi.
Hi. You're talking about Dungeons and Dragons, and I remember around Halloween of 1985, I worked at a club in Chicago called Limelight, and at the Halloween party, I met a guy, and it was a costume party, dressed like a vampire, asked me to go out for dinner, and I said yes, and on the way home, I realized I have no idea what this guy looks like when he shows up at the door. Well, it turns out he worked for TSR. He knew that I had a young son. And he brought with him, I guess, to curry points with me, every single thing that TSR had put out up until that point. And, I mean, the stuff just kept coming up to the door, box after box after box of stuff. And my son was, like, the hit of the neighborhood for, I don't even remember how every kid in the world ended up at my house, which I'd rather have than him going wherever they would go. And, yes, now he's 50 years old, and he has actually moved out of my basement. He doesn't still live down in the basement playing D&D.
Kathleen, thanks a lot for sharing that story. It's a great story. I don't exactly remember D&D in the 80s being the ticket to popularity, Ben, but it has changed in some ways from being this really niche nerd thing to a lot more people play it than that original core audience.
You know, I hope this might sound silly, you know, I teach 7th and 8th grade, and it was about a year ago, I wandered into the teacher's lounge, and it was filled with women under 30 talking about their D&D campaigns. And again, for me, as a white guy in my 40s, where role-playing games were pretty white and pretty male, it blew my mind. I would honestly tell you, as popular as role-playing games have become, indications are that it's even the rate of increase in players is about to go vertical. The speed of increase seems to be picking up, not slowing down, which again is crazy to think about. You know, when you think about how nerdy and niche role-playing games were in the 80s and 90s, you know, you feel glad that they're even talking about them on TV shows. But the fact that, again, I honestly believe that we're about to see a multiple of the number of people currently playing start playing, that is my prediction. Did that make sense?
Sure. Thanks for that call. We're talking to Milwaukee-based writer, teacher, and podcaster Ben Riggs about his new book. It's called Slaying the Dragon, A Secret History of Dungeons and Dragons. It tells the story of TSR, the Lake Geneva company behind the famous role-playing game. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about the history of Dungeons and Dragons or what the heck it is? Have you played it over the last year, over the last five decades? Do you have a memory you want to share? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Ben Riggs. He's from Milwaukee. His new book is called Slaying the Dragon, A Secret History of Dungeons and Dragons. You can join in with your memories, your questions at 800-642-1234. Memories from five decades ago or from a session last night. Rick joins us now in Evansville. Rick, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First off, I want to let you know that, yes, I did buy the book and I have started reading it. I've only gotten through the first chapter, but so far it's great.
Thanks, Rick.
Secondly, I used to play back in the day, late 70s, early 80s, you know, junior high, high school. And it was fun then, but it was a little harder to play because you had to make everything up yourself. You're playing there in your head with the rule book, a notebook, and graph paper. Nowadays, I've started playing again due to my daughter getting into it, and now my granddaughter is really getting into it. So we've started playing it again with the 5th edition stuff, and they've made it so much easier with all of the pre-written campaigns to go on. There's pre-written, pre-planned single-shot games where it, you know, you come in with a brand-new character, play for 2 hours, you know, do one adventure and then you're done, or you can continue those characters on to other adventures. You know,
Rick, thanks a lot for sharing the love that you're playing a multi-generational D&D there. Ben, what do you think?
I think that that intergenerational experience is becoming happily common. Again, like it's something that, you know, my parents never really understood, but now it does seem to be a thing that you and your kids can do together. I have an 18-month-old, and one of my friends was like, "Oh, only 10 years until you have a new player in your D&D campaign." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that's true." Also, again, there has been a huge proliferation of materials for Dungeons & Dragons. Wizards of the Coast did something radical with the D&D intellectual property about 22 years ago, and they opened it up. Essentially, anyone who wants to can make their own D&D rule books, can make their own D&D settings, put them up for sale on the internet, and make money off them and not have to send Wizards of the Coast a dime. And the result of that really has been an incredible richness of settings and adventures and options for Dungeons & Dragons players. It may be, again, one of the reasons that you're seeing this exponential growth in players is the IP is open. You know, it'd be like Disney saying anybody can make a Star Wars movie. It's crazy.
Thanks a lot for that call. We heard from Dan in West Salem who emailed about, it wasn't just TSR, but it was also the gaming convention Gen Con. It got really huge in Lake Geneva until it was finally moved, I think, to Indianapolis at some point. That was a big part of the story of Wisconsin's role in gaming, though, Ben.
Well, it's amazing. Gary Gygax also started Gen Con. You know, like, again, if you're looking for a reason to call Gary Gygax the most influential Wisconsinian of all time, he didn't only create a radical new medium. He created the largest tabletop and role-playing game convention in North America. It moved out of Lake Geneva to UW campuses. I forget which ones. Then it settled in Milwaukee for a good long time. And then when Wizards of the Coast bought Dungeons and Dragons, they ended up moving it to Indianapolis. And Indianapolis does do a really good job with it. Again, I feel like, you know, I'm a Milwaukeean. I went to Gen Con in Milwaukee. Indianapolis does a better job with the convention than we did. Again, it feels like Dungeons and Dragons, TSR, all of that has always been something that the state is more ashamed of than proud of. And I think it's one of the reasons we lost that convention.
Let's go back to our callers now. Valerie is with us in Milwaukee. Valerie, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What you want to tell us about?
Sure. So I'm 30, and I wanted to play D&D for a long time, but I was always kind of intimidated by it. And I have been watching a lot more web programs like Dimension 20 and Critical Role, where you can watch people playing these really long, wonderfully creative campaigns. And I think it's great to make it more accessible. And I just started playing my own campaign a few months ago, and I just want to kind of bring up that new exciting aspect of it.
Valerie, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Ben, yeah, there are a lot of things where you can watch other people playing D&D and other role-playing games.
Yeah, about huzzah for you, Valerie. About 14 years ago, I thought tabletop role-playing games were dead. I went and bought everything I wanted. I put it in my basement, and I thought, role-playing games are done. They've been killed by video games and the recession, and it's over now. People will look at it the way they look at Pet Rocks. But I could not have been more wrong. Both video games and the internet have been fantastic for tabletop role-playing games. Video games essentially teach you how to play role-playing games because they stole so much from Dungeons and Dragons, hit points, levels. And YouTube, which again, I thought people would be on there watching pirated South Park or something. Instead, YouTube is a gigantic engine for teaching people how to play Dungeons and Dragons with the best imaginable teachers, with voice actors and comedians playing the game, making it look just amazing. You know, not only that, but tabletop role-playing game has something that electronics do not have, which is just you have to gather with other human beings and experience the animal warmth of your fellows, which, again, when we're online all day with Zoom, when we are just engaging more and more electronically, being able to get together with people and to have to get together with them to play this game, it's just a tonic and antidote to all of that.
Thanks for that call. And just our last minute, there is an effort to establish that statue that isn't there in Lake Geneva, I think, for Gary Gygax. What are you hoping for to get Wisconsin to recognize this part of its history?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say we could start with Governor Evers officially recognizing Gary Gygax Day, which just recently passed. Because, hey, again, if he's the most influential Wisconsinian of all time, we should at least take one day of the year and make it an official holiday here in Wisconsin. So that is what I will push for, sir, making Gary Gygax Day an official holiday in the state of Wisconsin.
All right, roll 20, difficulty 15 to make that happen, Ben. Ben, thanks a lot for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. I'll be anytime you want me on. Oh, and if you're really interested in D&D, you can see D&D sales numbers on my Twitter page. It's at @BenRiggs_.
Ben Riggs is a writer, teacher, and podcaster from Milwaukee. We've been talking about his new book. It's called Slaying the Dragon, A Secret History of Dungeons and Dragons, looking at the origins of this incredibly influential new kind of game. Got its start in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. He tracks the twists and turns both on the creative side and the business side of things.